So, I think most people are in now. So I'm going to start this evening's little talk. Another suggestion of a talk by someone beforehand. And just how to deal with, well, how to transcend all anxiety and worry in life. Actually, is the light fully on now? Because they're usually much brighter than this. Are they fully on? Because if it's being recorded, sometimes you need it really, really bright. Ah, that's a bit better. Okay, so anyway, just how to deal with fear and worry and anxiety and all that sort of business, because so many people are worry guts, and it causes so much problems and difficulty in their lives. And you should look at me, I've got no worries at all, and I should have heaps. Look at me, I've got no financial security. You know why? Because I don't have superannuation. I've got no retirement fund, no retirement benefits, no safety net. I haven't got private health insurance. I haven't even got a bank account or a credit card. And you know that I was just looking at the constitution of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia here. And you know you can kick me out any time. The AGM is coming in next month. And you could ask me to leave. And that would be it. I'll be out on the street. No hope, no job, no money, no wife, no family. I've got absolutely zero job security. But do I look worried? So why are you guys worried? You've got all this stuff. I think that's one of the reasons. The more stuff you have, the more you have to worry about. And as also, and I know actually that my future is just so safe and secure. You know, I do go traveling a lot. And I don't buy health insurance whenever I go to these places. You know, people try and get me health insurance. But I say, no way. Because my insurance policy is all of the kindness, the goodness, the service, looking after many, many people over many years. And it's so effective. I just come back from Korea. Even in Korea, there's lots of people know me there. And so if I get, I just had a little bit of a cough when I was in Korea. Because it's minus 10 degrees outside. And you wouldn't believe, I think there's a couple of Korean people here. In the rooms, it's 26 degrees. It's so hot inside and so freezing outside. I don't know why they make it so hot inside the rooms. But anyway, I had a little bit of a cough there. And so many people want to look after me. So many people want to give me medicines. And I've told you that here before. I have to really suppress and hide any sickness which I ever get. Because if I cough once, it happened here just about a few weeks ago, I coughed once, by the end of the talk, I had 3 bottles of cough medicine. True. They just went out in the middle of the talk to go and buy something for me. So that's my health insurance. People will be fighting over looking after me. Isn't that nice? Because that's from kindness. What it actually tells me is that if you really are a good, kind, generous, wonderful, nice person, that is the best investment for your future you could ever have. It's called karma superannuation. You put in a little, and the Buddhist Society of Western Australia will put in the rest. Just like the government. And it's true, because in the meditation even, I often tell people, look, if you want to have a peaceful, happy, healthy future, where is your future made? When is the only time you can do anything about your future? It's right now, isn't it? So if you can make a healthy, happy, calm, peaceful, beautiful, present moment, that's the best you can ever do for your future, which means you don't have to worry about anything. You are doing the very, very best by putting more attention, more kindness, more effort, more generosity, more beauty into this present moment, then you're making a beautiful future. So why should we be anxious at all? That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? And I've said that many times before. The reason I have to keep saying it again and again and again, because you all need brainwashing. When you have an advertisement on TV, do they just say it once? They say it many, many times. when there's an election on, as I've figured out there's an election on now because I saw adverts on the way up here, they keep on repeating the same message again and again and again. It's called brainwashing, and on a Friday night, you are brain laundered. Washed and washed. Because you've got to keep putting these messages in until one realizes, yeah, why not? It's the same that sometimes people object when they say, look, that's all very well for you, Ajahn Brahm, but you don't live in the real world. I do live in the real world, much more than you expect. When people say, you know, when I go traveling, where do you live, Ajahn Brahm? I say, on an aircraft, which is probably, I spend more time on aircraft than I probably do in Bodhinyana Monastery, maybe, because I always travel around a lot teaching. And when you're traveling around a lot, sometimes you miss connections. Sometimes you don't know if someone's going to meet you at the other end. Sometimes you don't know if somebody's going to find something in your bag which is illegal. Sometimes you might disappear. But am I worried? Not at all. Because I've realized if you go in a jail, especially in Australia, you get 3 meals a day, sometimes 4. At Bodhinyana Monastery, I only get 2, if I'm lucky. In a jail, you can actually sit on a beautiful, nice, you have a very thick mattress. Over in monastery, I sleep on the floor. And even in, you know, in prison, you can watch TV. So, it'd be wonderful. And if ever I want to have a retreat, and I'm in prison, all you need to do to have a retreat is punch one of the prison officers in the nose, and they put you in solitary for 3 months. I get my own retreat. I can never get that here. So, am I worried about going to jail? And you can see, just see the positive side of these things. A lot of times, what fear and anxiety truly is looking at the future with negativity. Sometimes we've got this terrible negative fault-finding mind, always seeing the worst in things, seeing the worst in life, seeing the worst thing in each other, seeing the worst in oneself. And that same negativity sees the worst in the future. Oh my God, it's all going to go wrong. I know it's going to go wrong. The economy's going down. I know that lump in my breast is cancer and it's going to kill me. I know that, you know, that sort of inability to urinate as a bloke, that's prostate cancer, that's going to kill me too. I know I'm going to die. I know it's coming soon. There's a meteor coming from outer space. It's amazing just how people worry so much. And if they don't worry about real things, they go and watch the TV and worry about who's going to win the cricket or who's going to win the football or what's going to happen in the next episode of Neighbours or whatever else you watch. We just love worrying. What do you do that for? Absolutely madness. So instead of worrying about the future with negativity, we look upon the future with hope. Which is why, one of the reasons, in a talk in Singapore some years ago, I coined a new phrase. The opposite of worrying, which is looking at the future with negativity, is looking at the future with hope. So I said, don't worry, be hopey. Not happy, be hopey. What a wonderful English word which we coined here in Buddhist sense in Nolabara. Be hopey. What does be hopey mean? It means have lots of hope about what will go right in the future, what will go right in your life, what will go right, you know, in your career, what will go right in your relationships, what will go right in your body, what will go right in your talk. If you have hope, that is the opposite of anxiety. You can't have the two at the same time. So don't be afraid. Be hopey. No, not the Hopi. Hopi Indians. Yeah, did they get wiped out? I told you, they did go out. See, they survived, so they were Hopi. But that's not exactly how you spell it. H-O-P-E-Y. Make a new word. And when you don't have any anxiety, when you're hopey, you can just do anything and you have much more fun in life. It also means when you're not so anxious and so afraid, you're just much more adventurous in life. You don't mind doing new things and saying new things and just seeing what happens. That's when I go off overseas. When I went to Korea, what I had to do was amazing as a monk. Just going to debate the most famous Zen monks in the whole of Japan on TV. So there it was. Like, you know, Fremantle Dockers versus the West Coast Eagles, but this was Ajahn Brahm versus the top Zen monk in Korea. Who would win? This was exciting. It was just fun. So you don't go into life trying to win things or trying to sort of beat other people, because that is just going to give a lot of fear and anxiety and worry. Instead, we go there just having fun, exploring, being adventurous. Because when you have anxiety, you can't be adventurous at all. You get very tense and make too many mistakes in life. So be hopey and be adventurous in life. And you'll find it doesn't matter what happens in life, you never really fail. One of the problems with anxiety is a fear of failure. And look, there's no such thing as failure in this life. If you do make a mistake, tell everyone about it. And then what happens is, you make people happy. Have you not, it's true, have you not seen, apparently they have a TV show called Bloopers or something, when people make big mistakes and they go on TV and they show the whole world? And that makes people laugh. Isn't it great seeing people make mistakes? And when you actually make mistakes like that, it is fun. Even Amandus over in Bodhinyana Monastery, our longest serving Anagarika, he was asked to write a little bit about Ajahn Brahm in my 60th anniversary booklet. And he said, and it's a true story, that these are us reading glasses. I don't really need glasses to see you guys, it's just if I have to read something. But the reason I put them on all the time is because once he was driving me from Bodhinyana Monastery into here for the weekend, and halfway to the Nolamara, I thought, oh my goodness, I forgot my glasses. I better go back again because there was a committee meeting on, I need to read everything. I said, can you turn around? I've left my glasses back in the monastery. And then he looked at me and said, Ajahn Brahm, please look on your nose. And it was on my nose. It happened to me as well. Has that happened to you? It may have happened to you, but he wrote it in a book so everyone could read it. That's great. What that really means is you can make other people happy when you make silly mistakes. So what we're doing over there is when we make mistakes, we're not afraid of making mistakes. In fact, we realize that making mistakes is what somebody once called forward failing. Not just failing, forward failing. In other words, you learn, you grow and get better as a result. And when you're not afraid to fail, you can be adventurous, you can try new things. And when you try new things and are adventurous, you have much more fun and much more success in life. Because the trouble with most people, we're always so afraid what other people think of us. That's a stupid thing. People aren't thinking of it. The old saying goes, when you're in your 20s, young people, you're always really concerned what other people think of you. That's why guys have to, you know, speak really cool speech. You know, girls have to look good. When you're in your 20s, you're really concerned what other people think of you. When you're in your 40s, you get what's called self-confidence, which means you couldn't give a damn what other people think of you. You're going to do it anyway. You know people like that? Yeah, I'm just going to do it. Dress up, whatever I like. And when you're in your 60s, you finally find out that people weren't thinking about you anyway. If you could only know that when you're young, you'd have a much better life. People aren't thinking about you. You're not that important. I saw a little quote. One of the Winston Churchill quotes. He had the perfect response to people who said, do you remember me? And his response was, why should I? We always think we're so important that people remember us. My response, I have to be a bit more sensible than that, a bit more kind. So when people ask me, and I do meet so many thousands of people every year, when they come and ask me, and Ajahn Brahm, do you remember me? My response is, oh yeah, I remember you. You're that person whose name I keep forgetting. Now that's much nicer, isn't it? but anyway, now why do you get so anxious all the time and worry about what other people think of you? So number one, or that's number two or three, I forget now. with worry and anxiety, a lot of time it's your image and what people think about you, which you worry about and gives you a lot of anxiety. You know, you may be gay and you don't know, you're afraid of coming out. You worry what people think of you. It's okay to be gay. You may want to become a monk and afraid of coming out. Yeah, I want to be celibate. I keep on saying that celibacy is the last part of sexuality which is discriminated against. I even read a few weeks ago that some expert said celibacy is not natural. They used to say that for gays, you know, that gays is not natural. You know, we can give you some chemicals to fix it. Now they say that for celibates. You know, we can give you some counselling, Ajahn Brahm, so you can get a life. They do say that. So I'm fighting for celibate rights again. And I have told quite a few people, I don't know if I told this last time, the next gay and lesbian Mardi Gras in Perth, I want a float for celibates. Celibate rights I want. Anyway, I was going through anxiety yet and not being afraid of what people think of you. A lot of times that causes so much anxiety. You know, you may have big problems and going to jail. You're afraid what other people think of you. I know such wonderful people who've been in jail. Great people. Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, they've all been in jail. So sometimes we think, what will people think of us? What will people think of us if we make a mistake, if we fail? Please. It's not what other people think of you which is important. It's what you obviously think of yourself. That is the most important. And so many people, they take their self-image from what other people say about you. And that makes you very, very vulnerable to fear and anxiety. Here in a spiritual path like Buddhism, you get to know who you are, yourself, through your own meditation. You don't depend on what other people say of you. What do other people know of you? How can they know what you really are, what you've done, the difficulties you've faced in your life, and just how far you've come so far, what a struggle it's been for you. How can anyone else judge you? They absolutely cannot. They cannot really know you. Even your partner you're living with for such a long time, after even many years, they're still discovering you as you're discovering yourself. That's a part of a relationship, to discover one another and any other person discover who you are. How can anybody sum you up by calling you stupid or calling you a pig? They just cannot do that. That is impossible. But people believe that. That's the other story. If someone calls you an idiot, the only reason why you get upset is because you believe them. If you knew they were wrong, then you would never get upset again. People come and say, you're an idiot. And say, I'm sorry, sir, you're wrong. And you can walk away. Can you do that? A lot of times, no, because someone calls you a fool, an idiot, a nincompoop. That's a lovely word, nincompoop. It's much better than idiot. So they call you some of these bad words, and you believe them, and that's why you get upset. If you knew you weren't that, and you had your own self-image, which was based on your understanding of who you truly are, then, of course, there would be no problem anymore. And you wouldn't be so concerned of what other people think of you. And your esteem will be coming from inside rather than being controlled from outside. It's a wonderful thing when you know who you are and you're at ease with who you are. As I was saying during this retreat, you are valuing yourself, you're at peace with yourself, you understand who you are with all these things, and you respect yourself, which means you're at peace and at ease with where you are in this life. So what other people say is in one ear and out the other. Someone was asking me earlier about, they always get criticism at work, but you'll always get criticism wherever you go. Even I get criticism at work. I don't know what it is, but some of the monks I live with think that I always tell bad jokes. I don't know why they even say that, but I've got a good one for this week. It was the first day at school, as it's coming a couple of days' time. And this kid was asking, what's your mummy's name? So my mummy's name is Smiley. What's your father's name? His name is Laughter. He said, you must be joking. No, I'm kidding. My brother's called Joking. I thought that was quite a nice little funny one. At least you haven't heard it here before. It's a new one. Okay. I'll repeat it again so you can tell it to your friends when you go. Okay. First day at school, what's your mummy's name? Is us smiling. Father's name laughing. You must be joking. No, I'm kidding. My brother's called joking. Okay, see, so, you know, the only reason I can tell bad jokes is I don't care what you think of me. Otherwise, I'd never be able to tell a joke at all. So that means you're never anxious at all. If you are anxious, you've ever tried to tell a joke when you're afraid and anxious and it always comes out wrong? So why are you at all anxious at all? Why would other people think of you? What you think of yourself is all you really need to do. And the other thing is we're afraid of, not what other people think of us, we're afraid of mistakes in life. For me, mistakes are where you really learn. And so when a mistake happens, it's allowed and respected. Because I know that things are going to go wrong in life. They always do. That's one of my other sayings. Look, people say if you're not anxious about the future, if you're not worried about it, then you don't make all the plans for the future. And no, some people, they have plan A, plan B, plan C, plan... They have the whole alphabet of plans. They've even got plan A1, A2, A3, B1. It's amazing just how many plans people make. And I found out from experience, I'm 61 now, when I don't make plans, things go wrong. It's true, they go wrong if you don't make enough plans. You know, like planning, you know, for the Buddhist Society of West Australia next year, who's going to be the president, who's going to be the secretary and all this sort of stuff. When you don't make plans, things go wrong. But when you do make plans, they go wrong anyway. It's true. So either way they go wrong. Understanding that either way you make plans, you don't make plans, it still goes wrong. You might as well enjoy yourself before it goes wrong and don't make too many plans. And knowing that life is what goes wrong. It always goes wrong. In other words, it's always a series of unexpected events. And that is my understanding of life. A series of unexpected, unanticipated adventures, which you never know what you're going to do. Again, like just going to Korea. One of the things I got up to there was going on KBS. That's the national, the biggest TV station. On the evening news. Prime time TV. And so when you go on prime time TV with the news anchor interviewing you, of course you have to first of all go into makeup. You know, when I became a monk, I never expected to have makeup on. That's about the fourth time now I've had makeup on going to see. And what do they want to hear a monk for on the evening news? Now, of course, I never expected these things to happen. And of course, many people get anxious and really, really nervous because that live TV on the evening news, thousands of people are going to watch you. Would you be nervous? No, of course, it doesn't matter. If I make a big mistake, great. Then I can have a nice peaceful time. I don't need to go back there anymore. And I can enjoy myself. And of course, you know, if it comes out okay, you get invited back. You can help more people. Either way, I have this incredible positive way of looking at the future. Whatever happens, it all works out okay. Whichever way it happens. If you get sacked from work, great, you can have a holiday. You know how hard it is to have a holiday these times, trying to get enough time, long service leave. And people always want you to work. If you do take long service leave, there may not be a job there for you when you go back. It's really difficult these days trying to find a holiday. And now you get the sack. Yes, I've got a holiday. At last, I can enjoy myself. And don't worry about financial problems. I don't know why people worry about their finances so much. You're going to die anyway. You're not going to take it with you. So might as well enjoy it. Don't give it to your kids. They'll just waste it. So when you don't worry so much about life, you can enjoy it much, much, much better. And which means, you know, you don't worry about if mistakes happen. How many times have you really been in trouble? You know, your life has fallen apart. You know, you've got the sack. You know, you've lost the job. I remember this person said to me that sort of he was working for a company, and his boss, this was in Indonesia, his boss called him into the office and asked him to resign. He said, no, I don't need to resign. And this was a tough boss. If you think you've got a tough boss, listen to this boss. This boss got a gun out of his drawer and put it to the guy's head. Resign. Literally, he had a revolver pointed at his head, loaded with bullets. I don't think the union will stand for that over in Australia. You can get away with that in Indonesia. So he had to resign. And he thought this was the end of the world. He had two young kids and a nice wife, had a house with a big loan to sort of, you know, to pay for this thing, and he was out of work. Not quite fired, but very close to being fired. But what did he do? He said that was the best thing which ever happened to him in his life. He had all his business contacts. He knew the job he was doing, some sort of import-export business. So he started his own business, and now he's a multimillionaire. You see, sometimes we think it all goes wrong. It's unexpected. But he said, that was the best thing which ever happened to me. How many other people in this life, something terrible has happened to you? At the time you thought this was a disaster. And then afterwards you figured it was the best thing in the world which ever happened. This is why you shouldn't worry about anything. I think I probably told a story, because stories keep in my head and they disappear for a while. This was a story about the guy who's going to Mumbai airport. Did I tell that recently here? Okay. This was a guy, he told me this over in Serpentine some years ago. A businessman, he was doing business in Bombay. When the business was finished, he got a taxi to drive him to the airport in plenty of time to catch his flight, but the taxi driver got lost. Got lost in the city in which he lived. And driving round and round, I mean, the guy had plenty of time, but driving round and round, the clock was ticking over, round and round, still a long way from the airport, and the guy started to worry he was going to miss his flight. Round and round, and it looked like he was going to miss his flight. And as they actually started finding the airport, he thought maybe there is a chance, because, you know, in India sometimes the flights are delayed. But when he got close enough to the airport, he realized his flight was not delayed, because he saw it taking off. You know, as you go to the airport, you can notice on the tail whether it's your aircraft. He saw his flight take off, and he got so angry at that stupid taxi driver, shouting at him, getting really upset at him. And then, as he was shouting at the stupid taxi driver, he saw that aircraft fall to the ground, crashed with no survivors. You wonderful taxi driver. You're so wonderful. I love you so much. Here's a big tip. He saved his life. And that man told me that from that time on, he stopped worrying about things. Because he was so worried about missing his plane. And he didn't realize missing his plane actually saved his life. So all the things we worry about, it might go wrong, it might go wrong. You don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of times, the series of unexpected adventures called your life is very positive. At the end of your life, when you look back, all those things you were worried about, most of them didn't happen. And those that did, you didn't need to worry about them. They were blessings in disguise. So what a wonderful texture they gave to your life. Those of you who are old and look back on all the things which you thought were going wrong in life, they weren't going wrong at all. That was just part of the beauty and experience of your life. For a good example, like me becoming a monk. Why did I become a monk? Because my girlfriend dumped me. Oh, that was a terrible thing to do to me. No, it's a wonderful thing. I'm worried, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? My girlfriend's dumped me. So I became a monk. I became a monk to forget. Actually, maybe she did dump me, I forget now. But anyway, I did become a monk to forget. But it's a wonderful thing which happened, becoming a monk. I'm enjoying myself to the max. And doing all these things which, you know, you'd never think a monk would get up to doing, like going on TV, and going to these really ancient monasteries in Korea. One of the ones I went to is supposed to be the most famous meditation monastery in the whole of South Korea. and it's up in the mountains. You know, it's really remote. And it's got this 600-year-old monastery, just with these beautiful buildings covered in snow, just with the snow melting and little drops of water coming from the temple roofs. Every little drop, an opportunity to become enlightened. And the whole, and there's a beautiful frozen river just passing through this monastery. For over 600, 700 years, monks have been meditating, becoming enlightened and all the powers. It was like something out of a kung fu movie. And I was expecting this old monk in white hair, 200 years old, to walk out and say something wise. And it's great to be able to do those sorts of things as a monk, have a great time. Totally unexpected. Because, you know, my idea of being a monk would be just, you know, sit and meditate all day and do nothing else. But that's not what my life has turned out to be. And not what your life has turned out to be. So stop worrying about these things, but embrace the uncertainty of the future. Embrace that uncertainty. I don't know why somebody was asking me earlier, can you tell fortunes and future? And I, yeah, okay, I can. I must admit, you've got to be honest, I can tell fortunes. I can tell your fortune right now. Your fortune is uncertain. And I'll be totally correct. Anyone born in the year of the dragon, which is coming up next couple of weeks, your future... No, snake, sorry, not the dragon, the snake. You see, I make mistakes. And I'm very happy to make mistakes. It's a snake. Okay, the year of the snake. Anyone born in the year of the snake, your future will be uncertain. Because we don't know what's going to happen. This is why, as a Buddhist, I know that future is uncertain. You cannot predict it. No fortune teller can tell you what's going to happen because you can always do something about what's happening to you. You create your future. And that's the amazing thing to realize. You're not a victim of the future. You are a creator of it. And when you realize that that is the essence of the law of karma in Buddhism, you're not a victim, you're not fated, you're not put down. You can make whatever you like of what you have. And it's amazing to see ingenuity of people. When we had our New Year's Day, New Year's Eve party here, I showed a few videos, and one of those videos was this, what was it called, the Rubbish Orchestra. Was it called Rubbish Orchestra? It was these kids in Colombia, I think it was. They lived in a town where there was a big rubbish dump, and they collected stuff from the rubbish dump and made classical musical instruments. And I remember this cello, which was made from an oil drum and a piece of wood. I think they got proper strings from somewhere. And my goodness, it sounded like a real cello. And they made sort of these violins out of rubbish. And they were playing great classical music. And that was an inspirational video to actually to see just what kids, you know, with a innovative musician in the village could actually do with what people throw away. And actually to see that, see this oil drum with a stick and a few strings and people playing it beautifully. That was inspirational. And it just was an idea of what you can do with what you've got. Which means you can create the future. When you realize you can create the future with whatever you've got, the worry disappears because instead of worrying, oh, it's going to go wrong, oh, it's going to be terrible, what's going to happen to us? No, it's what are you doing with what you've got? The question changes from worry to be an active participant in creating your future and knowing that you can create whatever future you want. Beautiful thing to know. You are that creator. So you don't worry about the future. Get in there and start creating it instead. You know, when you worry, it incapacitates you. You worry, 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 which means you're not doing anything about the future except just worrying about it. Instead, get in there and make your future happen. And you can make that. That's called the law of karma. It's a liberating. It's number one, it liberates you, but it also gives you a heck of a lot of responsibility. You can't just go around praying, Ajahn Brahm, can you please create my future for me? Okay, I'll give you a big donation. Can you please tell me the lottery numbers so I can make a big, big winning? Can you please, you know, that girl around the back over there, can you please make me fall in love with her? People, amazing just what they ask monks to do. It's true, you know. All those things they've asked me. Said, no, I'm not going to create your future. If you want that girl in the back there to fall in love with you, number one, brush your teeth. Oh, you can smell too, yeah. Whatever it is. So you do something to create your future. And then you will find that you don't have any worries about the future anymore. Your focus is on the present moment, how you can make things happen. But those of you who have chronic worries and chronic anxiety, all this talk will go totally over your head and say, but I'm still worried, I still get anxious, because it's been deeply ingrained in you for such a long time. Every time you failed, you've been punished, you've been diminished, you're told you're not worth anything, so you're terrified of failing. You know, you'll be beaten down by sort of people tell me you're not beautiful enough, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, rah, 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 until you've got a low self-opinion of yourself, and you just look at yourself, you can't say to yourself, I'm good enough. You just can't do that anymore. And you're anxious about that future. So what can you do other than doing a lot of meditation or just coming here and being brainwashed all the time? The other way of dealing with worry in your mind is understanding that that worry, anxiety, fear, whatever it is, that you do feel that in your body. It has a physical counterpart to the emotion. Every time you're anxious, don't look upon the anxiety in your mind, feel it in your body. Because as human beings living in our modern age, we're far more in touch with our body than we are with our mind. And you can deal with it in your body by relaxing that part of the body. It's an old story I've told many times of a lady in Adelaide who had chronic anxiety. I asked her where she felt it. After a while she said it was in her chest. I asked her to describe that feeling so she can be fully mindful. Be aware of what it feels like when you're afraid, when you worry. Don't go focusing in your head and make that worry worse. How do you feel in your body when you're worrying about something? Now, once you know what it feels like, when you've got mindfulness of the body, a good old Buddhist psychology exercise, once you have feeling in the body rather than feeling in the mind, then you have power over that anxiety. You can massage that area, or just will it to relax. Feel the sensations in the body change. And they do change. If you find you're tensing up more in your body, you're going in the wrong direction. If you find you're getting more relaxed in your body, then you're going in the correct direction. Again, the mindfulness gives you feedback. That's one of its great qualities. You're in control because you've got a measure, a gauge, to see whether you're getting more tense or more relaxed. And after a little while, it's very simple. You realize what you need to do to relax that feeling whenever you feel afraid and worried. You can relax it by yourself. It's basically just compassion and kindness. That's all it is. And you're relaxing, relaxing, relaxing the body. For this lady, I told her to massage her chest whenever she gets anxious. She had huge anxiety. Now, massage that. That's a way of bringing awareness to your body and bringing kindness there. Massage it, massage it, massage it, until it goes away. And that's how she dealt with her chronic anxiety, which made her bedridden. Psychologists and doctors couldn't help her, but this method worked. So if you ask someone who really gets worried a lot, anxious at work, worried at home, worried just walking down the streets, whatever it is, feel that worry on your body. Don't go trying to work it out in your head. You're not skilled enough to do that. Feel it on your body wherever it is and relax that part of the body. Because as you're relaxing the physical counterpart to anxiety and worry, the anxiety and worry disappears as well. The two are joined together. Relax the body, the mind gets relaxed. So if ever you have any panic attack, please understand where you feel that in your body. know that feeling so well. Take your hand, just massage it until you relax so much. The anxiety, the panic, totally disappear. And those are ways of overcoming the anxiety and the worries which you have in life. A lot of times it's just a bad attitude of mind, just wrong ways of thinking. Because as soon as you get into worry, it gets worse and worse and worse, just like a snowball running downhill, getting bigger and faster, faster and bigger. And sometimes to short circuit that is very difficult. Massaging the area of the body is brilliant because it takes you away from reinforcing the worry, takes you back into the body so you can relax to the max. And when you don't worry so much, you have many benefits. But also there are some side effects to people who don't worry. Because I don't worry much at all in my life. If I worry at all, I go and give a talk, I don't care what people think about it. Tell jokes, don't really worry what sort of they say about my jokes. I don't really worry, dress like a girl and people don't know, put on makeup and go on TV shows and tell everyone about it, having good fun. But I don't worry, but it's a downside to not worrying enough in life. And the downside is because I don't worry very much, that's why I put on weight. Because people tell me if you worry a lot, actually you get thin. So I'm trying my hardest to worry some more so I can lose a bit more weight. I don't eat very much, but because I've got such a low metabolism and don't worry very much, that's why you get fat as a monk. That's why all the best monks and nuns are fat. That shows they don't worry. If you find a monk who's very, very thin, that means they're anxious, they're worried, just the same as everybody else. They haven't got their meditation together yet. But find a fat monk. Even when I went to Korea, they were very impressed with me being a fat monk because they said, you're Bodhisattva. And a Bodhisattva, those who know Buddhism, in Mahayana Buddhism, they're mostly Zen monks and Mahayana monks, and they have this very, very fat Buddha. And they said, oh, that's you. We never realized they have fat Buddha over in Australia. It's true. And you know what they do is if you go to any of the lottery stalls, they always you've got to rub the fat Buddha. And that's actually true. That happened to me just over there. This Chinese girl came in one day and she looked at me and rubbed my tummy. I didn't mind that, it's very good. If I need to raise any more funds for the nuns' monastery, I can just go and stand by a lottery stall somewhere, a dollar a rub. I think you can probably make a bit of money that way. But so you don't, these are different ways of overcoming anxiety and worry in life. Or I should say the last way to overcome anxiety and worry. Years and years and years and years ago, I've given so many public talks now, and people keep telling me that the scariest thing you can ever do in life is giving a public talk. And you can, I'm totally relaxed with giving public talks, but I remember years ago, I wasn't relaxed. I remember coming here once and had to give a talk, and suddenly the thought came up, all these people are coming today, they're giving up their Friday evening to listen to a talk. What if I really stuff up and give a really bad talk? I mean, I'm disappointing so many people. And also, they won't come back ever again. One bad talk, one bad joke, and that's it. They've gone. I come very close many times. I remember in an old newsletter, I was reminded about this because we're going to be doing a bit more work in our monastery. And we got a bridge over the creek, and I made that bridge. And I got it all engineered, make sure it was really strong enough to get a concrete truck over that bridge. But at that time, we thought that Bodhinyana Monastery, where the monks lived, the other side of the creek, that would be for the nuns, and this side for the monks. And so just as a joke, I just wrote in the newsletter, that bridge is strong enough now for two fat nuns to cross at the same time. Oh, I got so much bad letters after that. What are you talking about, two fat nuns? That's sexist. And a couple of people, they threatened to resign from the Buddhist Society as a result of that. So sometimes I do make some bad jokes. And that was one of them. I don't mind admitting my faults. It makes people laugh. And that's, I think, in one of the old newsletters years and years and years ago. So sometimes you do make mistakes. But what do? You laugh at them and share, okay, I've made a blue. It's a bit of a mistake. But, we all make mistakes sometimes. So give everyone a break. Give yourself a break as well. When I tell people about my mistakes, then you can actually be a bit more peaceful with your mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. Oh, what bliss to know you don't have to be perfect in life. I don't have to worry about always giving perfect talks. I don't have to worry about people always laughing at my jokes. I don't have to worry about a thing anymore. Why? Because it's okay to be imperfect. Are you trying to be so damn perfect? That's why you're worried. You want life to be so perfect? Look, when things go wrong, that's the nice edge of life. That's where you learn and you grow and you get challenged when things go wrong. When you miss your flight, that gets interesting. It's amazing just how many new friends you make when you've missed your flight and everyone else has missed the flight because it's been cancelled or something. It's amazing when things go wrong in life, just how many, again, more people you meet when you're in hospital because you got cancer or something. Sometimes it's amazing what happens when things go wrong. I remember so many people here, they've met their partner in life. I just was thinking of a couple of people, who, good friends over in England. He had a car crash. He really wrecked his body. But the nurse, he married her and they've been happy ever after. So the car crash was a wonderful thing which happened to him. He found the love of his life because he crashed his car. So this happens so much in life. So don't be afraid of making mistakes in life. Mistakes are perfect. You're perfect. And then you don't have any worries at all. Things go, they don't go wrong. I don't think there's a word called wrong. Everything goes right in life. When you get dumped by your partner, it's right. If you die young, you just go to heaven before everybody else. That's right. If you lose all your money, that's wonderful. You can live like Ajahn Brahm. It's true. No money means no worries. How am I going to pay the bills? You can't. It's the bank's worry, not yours. So I've got no place to stay. You can come and be a monk or a nun. We'll put you up. So what do you have to worry about? Nothing at all in life. Because you're allowed to make mistakes. Because you're perfect making mistakes. Told on the retreat, the old story. If you go into the forest, you've got no forest really in the town, but you go to our monasteries, there's forests there. You walk around and try and find a perfect tree. One which is really straight, with all the branches evenly spaced and all the leaves on there, as perfect as you would expect. There is no perfectly straight tree with all its limbs on. Every tree is bent, crooked, leaning, few branches off, many leaves brown. If they were all straight in rows, we'd call that government plantation. That's not a forest. In a forest, everything's all over the place. Just as I look at you guys here, you're all crooked, bent, gnarled, things falling off. That makes you human, you're beautiful, perfect. So when you realize what perfection is, then you don't worry about mistakes anymore. When you're not worried about mistakes anymore, you're at peace with yourself. Then you don't have any more worries. All worries is not understanding the perfection of life. Not understanding that mistakes are part of life, not to be avoided, but to be embraced and welcomed as part of life. And whatever happens in your future, to be learnt from, embraced, and realize that the only thing you can ever do is just, in this moment, make something good out of whatever life gives you. Just like you can make from a rubbish a beautiful orchestra. Seeing that just shows what you can make out of your life, no matter if you've been thrown on a rubbish dump from time to time in your life. It's amazing what you can make. So what have you got to worry about? Even when you're rubbish, you can make a beautiful cello or a violin. Therefore, there's nothing to worry about at all. And soon, if you follow this advice, you'll be as fat as Ajahn Brahm. So that's the talk this evening. Oh, no worries. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good, okay. So, now, I've got some questions from overseas now. Here we go. It's amazing, this goes all over the world. Today we've got one from Sydney, Holland and Germany. From Sydney, Ajahn Brahm, how to balance compassion and wisdom? Does compassion require one to sacrifice his or her happiness, peace and joy? No, that is not compassion. Compassion and wisdom realizes there's no I, there's no you, there's only us. Another little, someone sent me this, I've heard it before. What's the difference between illness and wellness? Illness and wellness. Illness starts with I, wellness starts with we. It's smart, isn't it? But it's true. If it's I, you get illness. If it's we, it's wellness. So it's not about I, it's not about you, it's only about we. So that's why wisdom and compassion is never sacrificing yourself. It's never just being selfish. It's always remembering it's about us. Life is always about us. Not about me, not about you, always about us. And it's never your problem, it's never my problem. Whose problem is it again? Our problem, yes. So if you're in a relationship, never blame the girl, never blame the boy, never blame yourself. Whose problem is it if you have a difficult day? Our. You own the problem together. You can fix things up then. So whose problem is it? Is it Tony Abbott's problem or Julia Gillard's problem? No, it's our problem. They're in it together. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they realised that? That would change the whole politics. Anyway. So that's compassion, happiness and joy. From Holland. Dear Ajahn Brahm, in the film book The Secret, they teach you that you can attract good things in your life by visualizing and feeling it like you already have it. How do you think of this? Oh my goodness, that's a lot of rubbish. It doesn't work that way. I hope things were that easy. It's not a secret, it's a scam. They should call that book. The secret is that you can fool so many people and make a fortune out of it. There's so many gullible people out there. But if you want to attract good things in life, then you have a good mind. Be kind, be peaceful, be generous. And you're a really good person. Of course you attract other good people to you. Have a great time. That is a real secret. I'm telling that every week. So that's a real secret. Question 3 from Germany. My partner always worries about me when I'm away. This affects me, although I just arrived at a point of feeling at ease, letting life revealing itself from moment to moment. What do I do? Always, what's he really worried about? Worried about you may find another guy and just, you know, run away with him, or is it her? Didn't actually say who, which one it is. If you really love your partner, I mean, what does actually love really mean? Real love is you just want your partner to be happy. Their happiness, their joy is the most important thing in the world to you. That's real love. So imagine that from Germany, your partner goes away and he loves you so much, or you go away and your partner loves you so much that your happiness is the most important thing. So if you find another guy who's even better in bed than he is, then wouldn't that be wonderful? He's so happy, said, oh, you're having a much better time with that guy than you are with me, that your happiness is the most important thing in the world for me, and you're happy with him rather than with me. Oh, such joy. Of course, that would never happen, would it? So what were you worried about? So I think that Holiness the Dalai Lama said this, and this is a very beautiful little saying. If you can do something about it, you can make a change, you can make a difference, then maybe worry about it. But if you can't do anything about it at all, then why worry? So if your partner's away, they're away. You can't do anything about it. So why worry about it? You're worrying about something which you can't do anything about. It's totally a waste of energy, a waste of time, and actually it creates a lot of negativity as well. So please don't worry about things which you can't do anything about. Number two is, if you are can do something about it, don't worry about it. Do it, for goodness sake. Because all the worrying about it, when you can do something, it actually stops the action in the present moment. So, it worries about you when you are away. What you can do, you can offer to put on one of these GPS tracking bracelets that they give to these prisoners, so your partner can always know where you are and you can feel happy. That's terrible when you live like that. So I don't know why he worries about you. I know that sometimes some of the monks worry about me when I'm away. Because remember when there was a tsunami, you know, the big tsunami? How many years ago was that? 2000? When was that tsunami? 2004 or 2005, okay. You know, I was actually in Penang when the tsunami hit there. And a few people died on Penang Island. I was actually in Penang when it hit. And the second monk was so worried about me, so concerned about me. He was ringing up all the people he could to make sure I was safe. Because, you know, some people... And I asked him, I said, oh, so wonderful, you were so concerned. I said, I wasn't concerned about you, Ajahn Brahm. I was concerned about me, because if you died, I'd have to be abbot. I don't want to be abbot. That's why they were worried, whether I was going to make sure I got back in time so they didn't have to do all the hard work. That was really funny. That was Ajahn Chattamala, a really good friend. And he was in Germany. So now that... So, worry, what's the point of it? Hopefully, that don't allow your partner's worry to affect you. Okay, although I arrived at the point of feeling at ease, letting life reveal itself from moment to moment, what to do? Exactly, so now that's all you can do. And you can teach your partner by example. When you're not afraid and you're not worried, that lack of worry will affect your partner and will ease his worries. When you're at ease with things, then that ease will be infectious, just like worry is infectious. When one person gets worried and afraid, you know, that affects other people. You get worried and afraid as well. I always remember that little story of, oh, there was in Thailand when I was a young monk over there, and they had all these ancient buses all over the place in Thailand, because it was a poor country just getting itself together economically. And because there were buses which weren't well maintained and everyone was smoking, every now and again the buses caught fire. And there was a spate of buses catching fire and people getting caught in them and dying. You know, maybe just one a week. And it was in the news, obviously. And one of my friends, who's a monk, he was caught in one of those buses. He escaped, but his bowl and robe got destroyed in the fire. So I was on one of those buses, and you know that they always put the monk in the front of the bus. I've told you that story before. They put the monk in the front of the bus because the monk's good karma means it'll protect you from head-on collisions. They do that. And I remember being on one of those buses in Chonburi, going from Chonburi to Bangkok. As soon as I got on, put me right in the front, I mean really up in the front. And the bus driver was smiling. He didn't ask me to pay any fare. No, please come in, because there was a movie on the TV in the front. Now he had a monk in the front. He didn't have to watch the traffic. He could watch the movie. And it's my job to make sure they didn't have any collisions. That was scary. And I tried that once on Thai Airways. I said, well, you know, this is what you do on buses. I can actually prevent this aircraft from having a head-on crash. Will you upgrade me to first class? They wouldn't do that. totally inconsistent. But anyway, where did I get to? Where was I going with this? That's right, on the bus. Yes, I was on the front. There's a monk next to me. And then suddenly somebody shouted out, fire, fire, fire. And that bus driver slammed on the brakes really fast. And everybody just went for the exit. The bus driver went through the window, you know, climbed out. And my Thai wasn't that good, and I never read the newspapers. I didn't know what they're going on about, fire, fire, fire. So I just sat there. And even the monk next to me, he was out. But I just sat there nice and peaceful. I didn't know what this big fuss was. And then there was another guy in there, in the bus, and myself, we were the last people out of the bus. And he just looked and said, oh, it's only a cigarette, it's not a real fire. And everybody came back in. That's one of my proudest moments. They all came back in. Oh, the enlightened monk. Oh, you have no fear. Oh, you are so amazing. And it wasn't I didn't have any worry. I was just stupid, that's all. I didn't know what was going on. So that's the other way to overcome worry. Be stupid. You don't know what's going on, so you don't have to worry about anything. That was true, though. I remember that. That was a wonderful experience. Now, people thought I was totally enlightened. No, I wasn't. I was stupid. I didn't know what was going on. If you don't have any worries and fears, maybe that will rub off on your partner, and your partner won't have any worries and fears. It just let you go. You come back again. So that way that you in Germany can be happy and well. So, any questions from the local audience in Perth? Yes. Oh, wow, maybe one, two. Okay, great.
Microphone incoming.
Yeah, okay. One, two. There we go. Wow, you jumped. It's very good dancing. Lucky from the Perth Ballet.
I'm interested in the meditation technique you were talking about for chronic anxiety. So it was mindfulness of the body, and how is it different from the kind of meditation that we do here, and would you suggest it as a meditation technique for someone with chronic anxiety?
Yes, it's what you do here is starting to develop the mindfulness by relaxing, being still. Because all the mindfulness is in the present moment. You have to be right now. And to be actually with a feeling which is sometimes quite unpleasant. Because when you have anxious, that's a tightness of tension then. It's very, very scary sometimes. So what you're learning here is learning mindfulness, learn to accept whatever you're experiencing. So it makes it easier to be mindful of your body feelings. It's amazing how many people are just totally out of touch with their own body. They never really feel it. They never really know it. Especially the painful feelings. As soon as we have a painful feeling, we take an aspirin or something to get rid of it, rather than learning about it. So once we know those feelings, then that's what I said in the little talk, we have power. Because once we can feel it, we can actually feel it get worse, we can feel it get better, and we notice what makes it get better. What makes it relax? What makes it get easier? And this is compassion, basically. Kindness, letting things be, making peace, embracing, not fighting. And you notice that, first of all, just the pain gets a little bit less. And then more less. And even the example I gave, you use this for many, many things. I love telling this story. A couple of years ago, I had food poisoning in Bodhinyana Monastery. It's called occupational hazard because, you know, you give us all types of food. We don't know what we're eating. And, you know, I had really cramps. And in my heart, instead of calling a doctor, which I probably should have done, mindful of the cramps, being able to be with that rather than trying to get rid of it, and relaxing just with kindness. And all it took was 20 minutes. This is honest truth, 20 minutes of mindfulness and kindness. And all the cramps totally disappeared, had no symptoms of food poisoning at all, just got up, just like normal again. 20 minutes to get rid of acute food poisoning. That's what you can do with this. You can learn your body, you can relax it, open it up, heals itself so quickly. Because obviously I've been meditating for a long time, so you know, that's one of my incredible strengths, to meditate like that. If you have that with your anxiety, because it is a big problem, you soon learn how to be mindful of it, and you will learn how to be kind to it because you have to. And you can learn how to relax that feeling. And the great thing is, when the physical feeling disappears, so does the emotional course. And that's a brilliant way of having some control over your emotions. Mindfulness, but also has the compassion to it as well. So yeah, you can learn that. You can teach that. Many psychologists teach that. I've taught them how to do that. So they can teach that to their patients. It's not just anxiety. It can be even anger. If you have an anger problem, a rage problem, whenever you're angry, you can feel it in your body somewhere. Know that feeling, which is always associated with being really angry. Know that feeling. And then learn how to relax that feeling. And when you relax the feeling, the anger disappears as well. They're connected. Let go of one, the other one goes too. That's very good with anxiety. And basically every other emotion that exists. Even grief. If you have some really, really bad grief because someone close to you passed away and they really, really depended upon them and loved them to bits. Where do you feel it in your body? What's that feeling like? Describe it to yourself. Describe it to someone else, it's even better. That's getting to know it. And then learn how to relax that feeling with kindness, massage or whatever. And you find the grief goes too. That's how it works. And the meditation here does give you more skill of being aware of your own body. Does that answer the question? So, very good. There's another question over here.
Yeah. This is a really serious question, but did you ever thank your ex-girlfriend for steering you towards being a monk?
No, it would be great if I could find her somewhere and say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you haven't dumped me for somebody else, oh, I would have been married with, you know, with you probably. And our kids and grandkids and the mortgages and, oh.
Wouldn't it be a great story if she was watching you?
Yeah, watching, yeah. So if you remember me, please thank you so much. You know that old joke about, I told it the other, oh no, anyway, it's coming anyway. So as soon as I start, I can't stop, even if I told it last week. It's about, you know, the shortest fairy tale. You know, fairy tales, they always have to start with once upon a time. And they always have to end with, and they lived happily ever after. So the shortest fairy tale is once upon a time, a boy proposed to his girlfriend. She said no. And they both lived happily ever after. The monk's joke. And I told that to our librarian some time ago, and he looked at me stone faced. He said, I'm going to Malaysia to get married tomorrow. Oh God, what have I said? And sometimes I really make big mistakes. He didn't think that was at all funny. Anyway, so thank you all for listening. Thank you for the questions from everybody. So now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. We've gone way over time. Who cares?
Arahaṁ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā Buddhaṁ Bhagavantaṁ Abhivādhamī Sovākato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṁ Namassāmi Suppatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangha